Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Leroy Allen, and I am the host of the Life Enhancement Radio and Talk Show. I would like to thank everyone for joining us this evening, and for those of you who are joining us for the very first time, our mission statement is to enhance the lives of our listeners with power-packed information and resources that ultimately make one's life better. I am equally excited about our special guest, Mr. Brian Jones, who is a well-documented mortgage consultant within our community. He and I have had the distinct opportunity of working together on various platforms, and the one thing that I do know is that Mr. Jones has a great appreciation for his craft, and he also has a great appreciation for the people that he works with. Brian, thank you for joining the Life Enhancement Radio and Talk Show. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, Mr. Allen. Fantastic. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity, and it's really a blessing.
Good, good. I'm glad to have you. Brian, why don't you start off by telling the listeners a little something about yourself so that way they have a good idea as to who they're listening to?
Sure, absolutely. I'm Brian Jones. I'm a mortgage consultant currently with Howard Bank Mortgage. I've been in the mortgage industry for a number of years. I love the real estate industry from a mortgage financing standpoint. So for over a decade now, I've been blessed enough to be in this industry and to be able to help people purchase their first house, their second house, fifth, sixth, seventh houses. It's something that I really enjoy. A lot of people, Mr. Allen, don't realize how powerful real estate is and how important it is to make the right mortgage decision when buying a home. So it's something that I've been able to really help people with, and I've gotten just as much as I've given because whenever someone buys a house, I'm as excited as they are.
absolutely, I so understand that and have a great appreciation for that as well. Brian, is there a website that the listeners can go to if they want, to exclusively have you to represent them for the purchase of their house?
Sure, Maya. I'll give my email address out there. If anyone has any questions about mortgage financing or if you need a mortgage consultant, my email address is bjones@howardbank.com. Once again, that's bjones@howardbank.com.
All right, listeners, there you have it. There you have Mr. Jones' direct email address, so that way if you want to contact him for additional information thereafter the show, you're more than welcome to do that. And one thing, as I said for sure, is that Mr. Jones has a great appreciation for his craft, and he has a great appreciation for all those who come in contact with him. Brian, to get us started, what process do you take to help clients choose a home loan, that will meet their financial need? Because as you know, we are certainly in a need-based type of business, and so therefore, what process do you take to help them meet that need?
Absolutely. You said the key word there, Mr. Allen. Buying a house and, of course, choosing the right type of mortgage financing, it's just that it's a process. And it's really a customized fit. I think one of the biggest mistakes that we can make when choosing a mortgage option or a financing option is to treat it as though it's a one-size-fits-all type of thing. And it's not that. Every client is different. Everybody is a customized fit. Mr. Allen, for example, you or myself, maybe our future plans are different. Maybe someone, their financials are different than the next person. Their credit is different. All of these things play a big part into what option someone goes with. So the first thing to do is to sit down and actually draw out a roadmap, which is called a pre-qualification, a.k.a. pre-approval. And also in that, really, we dialogue and fact-find as to what the client is looking for, what their future plans are, how long they plan on possibly being in that mortgage or house for. All of those things are going to help basically create a customized fit as it pertains to a mortgage for them. With technology, technology is one of the biggest blessings, I think, to all of us. But it also has been a nemesis in the sense that it has taken out the time process of really engaging and sitting down with one another and really finding out the best fit. And that's I still believe in meeting 99.9% of my clients face-to-face to really fact-find to figure out how I can best help them.
Wow, awesome. Very, very, very well put. So in your fact-finding process, are there things that you look for that, you know, you would in return say to the client, we need to prioritize this first, A, B, C, D, and then we can move into the final commitment phase of the process. Is that something that you highlight within your process?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's buying a house, of course, it is a step A, B, C process. I mentioned technology a second ago. Of course, nowadays we have various different home shows on television.
Mm-hmm.
I always equate it to I have a lot of friends that are in the medical field, and of course, if you watch some of the doctor shows, my medical friends always say, "Well, Brian, that person would have passed away 10 minutes ago." It doesn't work like that, and it's the same exact way with these various TV shows. It doesn't work like that in process. The first thing we're going to figure out is if someone is able to purchase right now. Is right now the best timing for them? As it maybe it's as it pertains to credit score, as it pertains to income. If they're financially right now in a position to purchase, buying a house is a great thing, Mr. Allen. But we have to do it in the right season of our lives. To rush into buying a house if we're not ready yet, it can lead to disaster. So that's the first thing, is to sit down to fact find and find out if this season is right, if someone's finances are going to put them in a position to make buying a house possible right now. And if it's not right now, we're going to develop a game plan to figure out, you know, how to get to that point when the season is right.
Yeah, I so agree with you when you bring up the idea of, you know, it's not a, you know, one, you know, 6, 7, 8 process, but it's a 1, 2, 3, 4 process. And with that being said, Brian, there are many persons who would go online to fill out an application. And I happen to be one that would say unto that particular listener, don't apply or give off your personal information online. I'd much rather see a person or advise a person to actually meet with the loan officer and work up or cultivate, should I say, a relationship. So in that relationship, you get a perfect understanding of, one, where your money's going, and then, two, you get a perfect understanding of how the entire process works. To me, when they go and apply online, they eliminate the relationship or the rapport that they would once that they would altogether develop with you. Am I right about that?
100%, Mr. Allen. I agree 100%. You know, it's there, and I'm not going to get political or get spiritual here too much, but that you mentioned the relationship aspect, not just to the home buying process, but to all aspects of life. Everything in life is relationships. And when, to be honest with you, I prefer to meet clients face-to-face because it lets me know a little bit more about them, how I can best assist them. And then, you know, and of course, and I, you know, they, you know, I learn about their family, their goals. Today I sat and spoke with a lady. She was in her mid-50s, and her whole life, her goal of her main goal was to own a home, and she was basically the first person in her family to ever own a home before. It was so powerful her sharing that with me, but that allowed me to connect with her and to also find out how I can better help her. If she was just an email or an online application, I wouldn't have been able to get all that from her and to be able to be as effective as I can be for her, to be honest with you.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Rapport is such a beautiful thing when you're transacting business from one party to another. It's a beautiful thing. Brian, also, do you specialize in any particular type of loan products?
Basically, any type of residential mortgage I do specialize in. I probably 75% of my business is repeat buyers, first-time home buyers, and lately with the housing shortage right now, I've been doing a lot of renovation loans for clients, rehab loans as we call them. Here in the Baltimore area, there are several different first-time home buying programs that are out there that are designed to really help a first-time home buyer with things like down payment and closing costs. So I spend a lot of my time helping clients with that, qualifying for different programs and trying to create a customized fit for that part as well. I love first-time home buyers. They are they're one of the joys of my career is working with first-time home buyers.
Right. You said something about there being a shortage in the home buying process or inventory, if I can put it that way. With that being said, Brian, where do you see the real estate industry in the next 3 to 5 years? Where do you see it? Could you elaborate a little on that?
Sure, to the best that I can. You know, real estate is just like any other investment. You know, there's no way to pinpoint an exact as to where it's going to go. If I knew that, I would be on a beach right now drinking a Mai Tai in Hawaii. right now, a lot of people don't understand where we are right now in the real estate market. Where we currently are is we are in what they call a seller's market in the Baltimore area. Real estate is based on supply and demand. Mm-hmm. During the recession, one of the things that happened is they stopped creating the supply. They stopped building new homes. We had to get rid of the current supply of houses that the recession or the crash created. And just to give you a little bit of, just to kind of back into your question, what the recession created was a massive inventory. I don't want to say it created low demand, because the demand for housing will never be down, but because of the recession, a lot of people, their ability to buy a house was really decimated. But we found ourselves about 2 to 3.5 years ago in a really unique position, and none of us expected to be in this position this quickly after the recession, is we found ourselves with a housing shortage. Mr. Allen, it was almost like a car that has bad gas in it. We had to burn off the current supply of gas or houses before we could put new gas into the tank, and we've done that. Right now, we have and of course, we are, you know, several years, quote-unquote, removed from the recession, so people have gotten their credit back in order, they've gotten their finances in order, and they're back in the market ready to buy, but we have a relatively small number of quality houses out there. So it's a little bit competitive right now. We have a lot of demand, a lot of people in the marketplace, but not an equal supply of houses on the market. So that's why I say it's created a little bit of a seller's market or a short housing in the market. It's a little bit more competitive, which is, it's still a great time to buy. Rates are low. In the future, my prediction for the future, of course, at some point in time, we've been saying this for the last 2 or 3 years, is rates have to go up at some point in time. You know, we are still experiencing, you know, historic low rates. So in the future, I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or 2 years from now, but I do anticipate, you know, rates increasing in the future. I still predict a pretty strong real estate market, you know, for the next several years. I really do.
That's exciting. That's very exciting to hear, because I often share with persons that one of the greatest investments that they will ever make is the investment of buying a home. And I do not think that, you know, persons have lost that desire to want to purchase a home. And as relates to that desire that they have to purchase it, you know, the more easier it is for them to work through their process, whatever their process is on their way to home ownership, the more appreciation that they'll have for it. And what I mean when I say that, Brian, is I've come to learn that process should never escape you no matter what you're doing. Because it's in the process where new habits are birthed, in that sense. And when those new habits are birthed, you in return have the liberty to exercise the right in which you spend your money. Would you agree with that?
100%. Absolutely. You know, my grandmother used to always say sometimes it's just like life. You know, we sometimes work so hard through life to get to retirement, but we miss out on the in-between. And the in-between is the process that you mentioned. You know? And in that process, not only is it the journey, but it's also the people we meet. It's the experiences. So absolutely, homeownership is a process. That is the one thing I think that is not stressed enough. Buying a house is a process. It's not It's not going into the store, you know, picking a pair of pants off the shelf and walking out with it. It's a process that needs to be planned for and, of course, done the right way.
Absolutely. I so agree with you, Brian. Brian, what is the difference between a pre-approval letter and a commitment letter? I've received quite a few emails as it relates to this question, in particular from home buyers who want to know the difference between the two. So can you elaborate on that for us, please?
Absolutely. And of course, in mortgage lending, we have more terms and acronyms than we can shake a stick at.
Sure, of course.
A pre-qualification letter, also by some banks called a pre-approval letter, what that does, that's basically a letter that shows the realtor, but also the potential seller of a property, that someone is qualified to purchase that home, that essentially a lender or a bank has taken the time to properly look at the finances and, of course, the credit of the buyer. A seller is going to require that, you know, when you go to buy a house, of course, you're going to sit down with your realtor, you're going to do up a contract. But with that contract, when the realtor sends that contract to the seller or to the seller's agent, they're going to require a pre-qualification or a pre-approval letter to know that if someone has been qualified, a lender or a bank has taken the time to make sure the person qualifies for that property. A commitment letter is something completely different. A commitment letter comes into play when we're under contract. So the borrower is under contract, the seller has accepted the contract on their house, and, of course, so that's the starting point. The finish line is settlement. That's the finishing point of the last step to the home buying process. Settlement is the day when you get those keys in your hand. Just before settlement, a file will go to the person that approves it for a bank, and that person is called a mortgage underwriter. And that is basically a full-out approval from the bank, and, of course, a bank has committed to lend that money. And that's what a commitment letter is. That will be issued on every file that is approved, basically. A commitment letter where the bank is saying, okay, we agree to lend this. Now, on the commitment letter, I always tell people there's always a couple of small conditions, typically minor things, you know, that the underwriter will ask to get cleared up or for settlement. But that is that's basically the blessing from the bank that they have committed to lend that money as long as certain provisions are met, basically.
Got you. Wonderful. That's very well put. Also, Brian, can you talk to us about mortgage insurance? How does mortgage insurance play into the home buying process, or should I say the loan origination process? How does mortgage insurance play into that?
Mr. Allen, that is a question that I wish more people would ask. Mortgage insurance, now folks, also let's clarify, there are typically two types of insurances associated with the home buying process. There's homeowner's insurance, which is a lot like the car insurance on your car. It covers the house in case of damage or loss. But there's
Absolutely.
Also something called mortgage insurance, which should be thought of as foreclosure insurance. Typically, whenever somebody puts down less than a 20% down payment, once again, whenever their down payment is less than 20%, typically, someone or something has to back or insure that loan against foreclosure or default. They're essentially protecting the bank, in a sense, against default. And that's called mortgage insurance. Mortgage insurance is something that I think has been given. Well, I think it's something that's very misunderstood. people always say you want to try to avoid mortgage insurance if you can. And I do agree with that to a large point. There are several ways that you can avoid mortgage insurance. Putting down, of course, a 20% down payment is one of the common ways. Lenders, banks, we have some no mortgage insurance loan options where you can sometimes you can pay a buyout fee to the mortgage insurance company where you're paying a one-time fee to get rid of the mortgage insurance, or sometimes the lender is paying it out for you. But one of the things with mortgage insurance that I think needs to be looked at, especially in the case where someone is paying more out of pocket to get rid of it if they're going to not put down 20%, is how long they plan on being in the house for. For example, a first-time home buyer, on average, according to the numbers, on average, they typically stay in their first house between about 5 to 8 years. you have to make sure that you're going to be in that house long enough. If you're going with an option that's going to be more out of pocket, you have to make sure you're going to be in that house long enough to save enough monthly by getting rid of the mortgage insurance to make that extra out of pocket upfront option make sense for you. Mortgage insurance, and of course, I always tell people nobody wants to pay mortgage insurance, but it's not always a horrible thing if it means that you're saving more money in your pocket. I think one of the things that people need to realize nowadays, times, and a recession has certainly taught us this, is you do not want to break the bank to buy a house, meaning that you do not want to deplete all of your savings to buy a house. You know, life can and will still happen, a flat tire, you know, repairs. If someone loses their job, if tapping into your emergency fund means that you get rid of mortgage insurance and you're putting yourself into a bad position, it might make more sense to go with the loan option that has mortgage insurance if that's going to leave you in a better financial spot after buying the house. So when I say that mortgage insurance is misunderstood, that's what I'm referring to. It's something that I think that for some people it makes sense to have it. If that means putting them in a better financial spot and not, of course, draining all their finances, it's not a horrible thing in that sense. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely, and Brian, that's very well put. In particular, when you say, you know, there's always life after the purchase of the house. There's always life because our listeners are certainly want to be in a position where they can take a vacation thereafter. They want to, you know, be able to celebrate their accomplishment thereafter, and they want to be able to articulate their experience to someone else, and they want to be able to do it in a way that is comfortable for them and not in a way that diminishes their value of who they are. Make sense?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, I always equate it to, you know, it's just like buying a house is one of the greatest things because it's so much more than owning a house. It stabilizes communities. You show me a neighborhood that is 70% owners, and you show me one that is 70% renters, you're going to see two different neighborhoods. It's typically a first building block to wealth, and it is a fantastic family stabilizer. But it's just like buying a new car. If those of us that have bought a new car before, if the first 6 weeks that we own that car, no one can breathe on it. The kids have to ride in the trunk. We have plastic on the seats. You know,
absolutely.
It's our babies. Well, a few weeks goes by, and we're spilling drinks in the floor. We have French fries everywhere. Owning a home is the same way, Mr. Allen. We're always proud of it. We're always very happy with it. But the whole allure wears off, and the question becomes, where am I financially now that I've made this purchase?
Very well. Very well put. Brian, can you also talk to us about the APR?
Sure,
talk
absolutely.
To us about that. The listeners also sent emails out wanting to, you know, have that to be a part of our discussion as well.
Sure, absolutely. That's also a very common question. People will ask, what is the difference between the APR and, of course, the note rate, a.k.a. the interest rate? And they are two different things. Folks, your note rate or your interest rate is, of course, what your payments are based off of. And, of course, determines, you know, the interest that you're going to pay over the loan, over the course of that loan, the term. The APR is a very special device that's actually a little bit more than the note rate. When I say a little bit more, I mean it encompasses more. So, Mr. Allen, you could call three different banks, and Bank A could quote you, let's say, a 3% rate. Bank B could quote you a 3.5% rate. And, of course, Bank C could quote you a 3.75% rate. Now, to the average person, the lowest option, Bank A, at the 3%, seems like the best option. When, in fact, it may or may not be, what the lender might not be telling the person is what it's costing them to get that lower rate. And where that will come out in the wash is the APR. What the APR tells us is it takes into account the interest that we're going to pay over the life of the loan, but it also takes into account the fees, the cost that it's costing us to get that mortgage. And then what it essentially does is it takes those two costs, the interest plus certain parts of the cost, and shows that number as an annual cost number, an annual percentage rate, basically. And that's why the APR is important, is because it essentially will tell a client if they're being overcharged for a mortgage or not.
Oh, I see. I see. That's very, very important that you spread out that information the way that you did, because I believe that the listeners who emailed me regarding the APR have a strong idea and a strong comfort level as it relates to what to look for when they're out there shopping for their mortgage. Also, Brian, can you, for the very few minutes that we have remaining, can you talk to us about points? What does the point mean as relates to the loan process as well?
Sure. Another great question. Points are, that's a thing of debate. You know, it's you can talk to three different loan officers and mortgage consultants, and we may all have three different views on that. But points, also called origination points or discount points, So 1 point is 1% of the loan amount. It's a fee. It's a fee that goes to the bank. And you know, years ago, Mr. Allen, years ago, paying a point would significantly lower your interest rate. So, for example, a bank may give you one rate, but if you were willing to pay a point, a fee to that bank, you would get a significantly lower interest rate. Nowadays, and in many cases, I never advise paying points typically. Rates are low right now. They are very low. And, of course, our market is a little bit different than it has been in years past, where paying a point or paying multiple points, the cost of it might not always justify the savings. So it might not be benefiting you as much to do that as maybe it had been in years past. But that's... that's what points are. Points are fees that go to the lender for essentially, in theory, supposedly giving you a lower interest rate. What you want to be wary of and what you want to analyze is to make sure that if you are paying points, that the cost justifies the savings, basically.
Got you. Very well put. Brian, the last question, could you also draw the distinction between the mortgage broker and a loan originator?
Absolutely. And this of course, is another thing of debate and topic in the industry. I always tell people, folks, money is just like anything else. You can so, for example, if we wanted to buy a pair of shoes, we could go to, let's say, the department store in the mall and buy it, which is retail. We can go out to a wholesale outlet, you know, and there's various ones here in the area that we could name. Or we could go directly to the factory in China, let's say, where the shoe is made and buy it. Folks, money works the same exact way. There are various channels for getting money, especially mortgage money. A broker, and I'm not knocking them, but a broker is essentially, think of them as the retail person, basically. They are the middlemen. A broker is an intermediary that is taking a bank's money and lending it to you. What are some of the – in years past, brokers were very beneficial because they had a little bit more flexibility. When I say flexibility, they were able to you know, banks – when banks were a little bit more rigid with guidelines, brokers in the correct way, they were able to customize, you know, certain products for clients. But essentially, with them being the middleman, there's of course a fee. They have to get compensated.
I see.
Nowadays,
I see.
Of course, with lending guidelines changing, and I'll say changing for the better, in my opinion, there are not a lot of brokers left out there. And of course, sometimes it doesn't always justify to pay the cost of a broker, to pay that fee. It might be more beneficial and make more sense to go directly to the source, the bank. You know, the bank can get that money. It's going to be a cheaper price for it, basically.
I see. Brian, we have come to the very end of our show. I want to thank you very much. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. And if I could ask the listeners to do three things for me as I normally do, I would simply ask everyone to live hard, live long, but most importantly, live right. Thank you once again, Brian, for your collaboration of information and resources. And I will be talking to you soon. And for everybody, have a great weekend until we are able to talk to one another again. Thank you, Brian.
Well, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.